Hey guys, if you want updates on our latest episodes, then be sure to subscribe to the Film Colossus podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Also, if you'd like to support the show and hear episodes ad-free, then subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmcolossus.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My name is Chris Lambert.
And my name is Travis Bean. And on today's episode, we're talking about a coming-of-age movie that's destined to become a classic, Bottoms. We discuss the history of high school movies and why this absurd take on growing up and finding your voice stands out.
Bottoms, Travis. Bottoms.
Chris, you come in hot.
I know.
As somebody who edits these episodes, I know you always come in hot.
It's because I'm so excited to just talk with you about movies, you know?
I'll have to go back and look at the data here. And so don't hold me to this completely, but I'm going to compare all of the sound waves I have in every episode. And I'm going to say this one was the loudest yet, which means this is the most excited you've been.
That's pretty fair. I mean... Thinking about past lives, I was really excited for that, but also it's such a somber movie.
Yes, exactly. You came in with the proper energy there. It was like it was a gravitas to it.
Yeah. This though, this is one of the best movies, and it's so much fun. It's just hilarious start to finish. Though I have no idea. Like typical, I have no idea how you feel about the movie, so I'm all excited, and I'm hoping that it's the same for you.
What do you think? I think of the movie.
I think you had to have loved it, but I don't know.
I'll put it this way. This is much more in my wheelhouse. I feel like, God, every time I talk about, specifically on the show, I mean, you can write things a certain way. You can present yourself a certain way. But like when you're talking, you're just like going off the cuff here. You sound how you sound. And I feel like I inevitably sound like somebody who hates movies for smart people. And I like movies like this. Which isn't completely true. Obviously, there's a lot more nuance to it than that. But I will say, in general, I think a movie like this is a safer bet because I place a lot of importance on entertainment. And I just, and like liveliness and color and personality, like I think all those things are, you and I, with Film Colossus, we dissect movies. We try to find the deeper meaning of a movie, and that can be done in the way we do it, like looking at themes, motifs. When you look at a movie that kind of way, like every movie is deep because like every movie is trying to do something and you can explore all those things. But one thing we don't really write about, which is like a little tougher to write about and be objective about, is just like the life a movie has and how that can allow a movie's message to hit a little harder and to have a little bit more room to breathe and come to life and all that. So I think a movie like this typically succeeds a lot easier than something like Banshees of Inisherin, which is a movie we've talked about in the show that I kind of like, but not really. Like, it's trying really hard to be dramatic. It's really heavy. I just think when you're going down that road, it's tougher to pull me in and get me excited about the message. But a movie like this, like, if it's having fun, if the people are clearly into the material, like everything just comes to life a little bit in that way. And I'm a bigger fan. So I'll just say from a broad perspective, from a distance perspective, this movie has a leg up in my book.
Good. That's a good place to start. Yeah, but did you like it? What a setup for them to be like, you know, no.
I thought this movie was great. I enjoyed myself tremendously. The only bummer for me was I saw this in a theater. My wife and I were really excited to watch this movie. It had been ever since we saw the trailer. Love high school movies. We'll be talking about high school movies a lot here. And we were in Indiana this past weekend. And I'm really sorry to anyone in Indiana, especially if you want to be an advertiser on this podcast, but your state sucks. And nowhere in Indiana was showing Bottoms. Like, I couldn't find it anywhere. So I had to wait till I came back home this week, and we can't go to the movies at the same time because we have a baby. So I had to go see it by myself, which seeing a movie by myself, that's fine. But I know it would have been so much fun to see with my wife, so I'm excited to watch it again.
You probably felt like a little guilty being like, this is so good. Like, it's one thing if you go and see it and you're like, oh, it's bad. I can just go back and tell her it's bad.
Yes.
But then when it's great, you're like, oh.
Yeah, and I felt guilty laughing at anything.
Lord should be here for this.
And there were many times in the theater where I was laughing and maybe other people were laughing, but not like as loud as I was. Like the part where oh gosh, I gotta remember their names. I just want to say Ao, but I should use their character names.
Josie. Io.
Io. Is it Io?
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. My bad. PJ is like forcing Josie to say hi to Isabel. Is that her name? Gosh, I should have reviewed Isabel. All these names before we get started.
Yeah.
And just like everything she's saying to her, she's like, you look skinny. Like, she's just like saying anything that comes to the top of her head. It was making me crack up.
Like tilting a hat to her. Just.
Yeah.
It's such a good movie.
But yeah, it helps that everybody in the movie is like doing such a good job.
Yeah. You could tell they all bought in and were just so on board for this film. Did you know much about it ahead of time? What had you heard?
I saw the trailer. God, it's funny though. Like, I watched the trailer and was excited about it, but did not register the plot even a little bit. Like, later you said it was like something meets Fight Club, you know, Superbad meets Fight Club. And I was like, oh, it's like a Fight Club thing? Like, I didn't even know that part of it.
Had you watched Shiva Baby?
No.
Emma and Seligman's.
I feel bad because I really want to see that movie. It's been on my list for a long time, and it felt wrong to not watch it before watching this movie, but I have not.
Okay. Yeah, that's. I don't think. I mean, I knew Rachel Sennett from Bodies, 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 right?
Oh, yeah. She's great in that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's all I really knew of anybody. And Io, of course, from Bear, but I don't think y'all have watched The Bear.
I have watched The Bear, Chris.
Oh, you have? I guess Chicago, yeah.
Chicago, food.
Yeah, those things would be...
The food sold me. I didn't even know about Chicago when I started it.
And she's so great in that.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
I hadn't watched a single trailer for the movie. I just started seeing a bunch of people on Twitter posting about how excited they were for the film and then caught that it was playing at the Draft House. So went without knowing anything more about what the movie was, who was in it, anything. So that was quite the experience. And the theater was sold out when I went to see it. It was the advanced weekend where it was only playing in like 10 theaters across the country. So that was cool just to see it with, you know, a room full of people who are all laughing and really excited about it.
I mean, that's something else I missed out on. Like, there weren't very, very many people in my theater, especially on a Tuesday night when tickets are less. Like, I thought a lot of people would be there, but it was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's doing well. I think it gets a wider release this week.
Yeah, it does.
So that's good. Okay, I'm happy about that.
Yeah, it's got that potential to be a memorable high school movie. Because I know you've referenced Super... I think a lot of people have been referencing Superbad. Yeah. As like, this is the true successor to Superbad. In the sense that it's like, I think, a classic high school movie, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's immediately... Because I feel like for the last... I don't know. How long has it been since Superbad? That was 2008?
2007, I think.
2007? That's crazy.
Because, yeah, that would have been my sophomore year.
Yeah, 2007. I remember... when we went to study abroad in Australia, we walking around campus and we're just like, how do we talk to people? And we walked into a room and they were all just watching Superbad and laughing. I was like, oh, so Australians are just like us. Okay. That's, that's good.
I mean, kind of. That even makes me even more bummed that A, I didn't see it with my wife, and B, I didn't see it in a crowded theater because that was the case. Well, I didn't see Superbad with my wife, but I saw it with friends, and there were people in the theater, and like that's what I remember about Superbad is people laughing their asses off.
Yeah,
and I just had never laughed. Like I went twice, and I laughed so hard both times. So that is definitely. I feel like Bottoms has that energy. Like there are a lot of ridiculous, absurd moments, and like genuinely funny moments from people just delivering absurd material that like it's just clicking and flowing in a way that it keeps the energy running in the way Superbad does, and there is this sort of vibrancy in the theater, like everyone is just like kind of in it and experiencing something great like consistently the whole time.
Yeah, 1000%. I feel like if Bottoms was like at the point, because Superbad was kind of building off of the energy of Judd Apatow's name at that point with 40-Year-Old Virgin, mm-hmm. and Knocked Up, especially with Seth Rogen, where when you're going into Superbad, it just felt like the next in line for these movies that had already heightened expectations that people had.
Yeah.
I feel like with Bottoms, if it had something similar in that way, that it would be this immediately huge movie getting the kind of attention that Superbad did. I feel like it's going to have a little bit more of a like an underdog vibe to it, where Superbad was so highly anticipated.
Yeah,
but it's so like PJ is just Seth. It's just like,
yeah, totally. It's the same thing like Booksmart did, right?
Yeah, you know, Booksmart was a good example, and Booksmart's one that I always wanted to like a little more than I did. It very much was trying to carry the torch of Superbad, but I don't think it went to the same places that Superbad did. So I always see it get a lot of love, and I'm happy about that, but I've never felt the same way about the movie, which is why I'm so excited that I do about Bottoms.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've been thinking about that a lot, both Booksmart and Bottoms, and while I'm with you that Bottoms does carry the torch a little bit more than Booksmart, it's kind of a disservice to both Bottoms and Booksmart to just compare them to Superbad.
Yeah.
Like, none of those movies are really the same at all. like if I think about high school movies, like classic high school movies, there are like simple dramatic ones, like The Breakfast Club. And then there are ones that like ratchet it up a little bit but are still grounded in reality. To me, that's like Superbad, where like these things that are happening are ridiculous, but like they're dealing with very real emotions that people go through. And then there's something like Bottoms, which is like, yeah, this is all like real stuff, but like it's so insane, like people are dying.
Yeah.
and they're just like laughing it off. Like it goes to a different level that I feel like you got to go back further than Superbad. Like maybe something like Crybaby, you know, like a John Waters movie where like you know it's absurd going in. Or maybe even 21 Jump Street. Like that's pretty ridiculous. Although that's also, I was going to say it's grounded, but like even the moments where 21 Jump Street gets serious, like it's not that serious. So maybe it's more comparable to that. Yeah, 22 Jump Street is a whole different thing.
I love 22 Jump Street.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We should do an episode on that.
I would love to do an episode on that.
Didn't we do... We used to have a podcast. Didn't we do 22 Jump Street?
I can't remember. Was that movie Snack Attack? I can't remember.
Yeah, it might have been Snack Attack.
Maybe. I think that was... Was that the time frame? Yeah.
But in the pantheon of high school movies, regardless of like where it fits, like I think about all of the great ones that I've always liked, like even going back to Heathers or Can't Buy Me Love, like this has that kind of ridiculous premise that is perfect for a high school movie. It's just like these things high schoolers should not be doing at all, yet they are doing it, succeeding at it, and like growing.
Yeah, it reminds me of how excited and happy I was. I like in high school, I was the one that made my high school girlfriend go see Mean Girls because I was just seeing the trailer that I was like, this movie is going to be amazing. And then it was.
Yeah.
And there's just those few times where I've had like a really good feeling about a film. And with this one, I went in a little more blind, but as soon as it started from the first few minutes, I was like, oh, this is, they get it. Like, immediately, you just feel you're in such capable hands with the cast, with, like, Emma's direction. It's kind of crazy how well done it is from start to finish.
It's, I think a big part of it is, like we talked about, just the chemistry between everybody in the movies. Because, A, like, on their own, everybody is going for it.
Yeah.
From the football players to Marshawn Lynch just being Marshawn Lynch, you know. Like, everybody's in it, and everyone seems to get it. But on top of that, it has an energy. I saw recently Michael Cera talking about he was legitimately sad to leave the set of Scott Pilgrim versus the World because, like, everybody there loved each other, and, like, they had so much fun. And you can sense that in the movie. And that kind of thing, again, not to shit on the serious movies that we talk about in the show, but, like, that's probably not something you can really foster on a really dramatic set. Like, there's just something very special about a movie like this and the kind of energy it's able to channel from its cast and the clear camaraderie that they have, you know.
Watching some of the cast interviews that they've been able to do.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. And there was that one that went viral of just it's Io and Rachel, and they're getting ready to drink something. I think it was for a L interview, and Rachel sniffs it and then turns away, and Io goes, "Why? Like, what's wrong with it?" And she goes, "It has pineapple," and I guess Io herself is allergic to pineapple.
Whoa!
And so it's just one of those little things where it's like, you know, they've gotten close enough to where Rachel's not only, like, aware of that, but caring for her and being that protective that she's turning away with the drink.
Wow, she's just like what's that guy's name? Tim in the movie?
Oh, yeah, Tim.
Jeff's buddy.
Yeah.
That guy, I mean, Nicholas, God, I'm going to say it, Gallatine? My bad. Nicholas, what up? But yeah, Miles Fowler, like, that dude had me. It's funny because, like, everybody in the movie, there were a lot of moments in the movie where, like, I, like, wanted to get annoyed because there are a lot of, like, tropish things in the movie and a lot of archetypal characters. And everything Miles Fowler was doing is just, like, the typical, like, bad guy who's hell-bent on ruining these girls' lives for, like, no reason at all.
Yeah.
But, like, again, it's the way everybody's handling their characters. Like, it works, and it's, like, still funny. And in that way, like, it feels fresh instead of familiar.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Yeah, just how his, like, expressions, the little tone to his voice when he's saying things, and how the girls just don't, they're like, what?
Yeah.
Why it's so much more serious for him than it is for them.
Yeah, there's a good dynamic, but it's funny how the dynamic will shift from like people to people. Like you can be completely ridiculous with one person and then this other person is being so ridiculous that you come back to reality and like, dude, what are you doing?
What is this? It's my favorite thing in Always Sunny when one of them is the straight character in the show, like the straight man. So when they're all being psychopaths, it can be entertaining, but it gets a little exhausting. But in the times when like Charlie is the one that has the logic and the reason, or Max the one that's a little more common sense, I always like those moments where they kind of can be the voice of reason when the other ones are acting crazy. And having that dynamic of just like sometimes they're crazy, sometimes they are recognizing how crazy someone else is. Like they're all looking at the team crowding around Jeff, just being like, what is like, I barely touched him with the car.
Yeah. I think a really cool shit. That was so good. I it's funny. I feel like I saw that scene play out on Twitter and I kind of was just watching it. I was watching the video, but without sound, and like saw it and understood it, but didn't think much of it. And then seeing it in theater, I don't know why, it was just like seeing it brand new. Like I just didn't, nothing was clicking without sound. And like with the whole energy of the scene and like the buildup and everything, like it's just very well done. Like it's such a stupid, ridiculous moment that shouldn't be funny, but it is.
Yeah. I saw too another video on Twitter. I just saw the text. I don't know if it's confirmed, but apparently Io ad-libbed, what is it when you just go off script?
Sure, yeah.
The scene where she's talking about her life being over and she's just gonna marry this guy and he's gay and he's gonna become improv? A priest. What's that? Yeah, that's improv. It. Yeah, yeah. That was all improv. Wow.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, it's such a good moment.
Oh, man. I think one great thing about this movie is it's very LGBT focused, and it's clearly born from that environment. And that was, I will say, like the one little bit of trepidation I had heading into the movie. Like, I'm very pro LGBT, but I'm not like exactly involved in that community. Like, it reminds me of when I went to a Kim Petras concert. Like, I'm so different from everybody there. Like, I'm this lame white dude like hiding in the back. Like, I'm just there to see Kim Petras, but like everybody there is so lively and like part of it. And it made me wonder, like, not that I wouldn't get the movie, but like if it would be for me, or if like I'm officially too old now to like high school movies like this. And that's just like, it's really not the case at all. It feels very timeless in the way characters are presented and ideas are explored, and everything just feels very holistic and like it's funny, we're calling it absurd, but like it is very delicately handled at the same time. Like it feels very of the moment, and like it's talking about very real issues in an intelligent way.
Yeah, it's a smart movie. I think that's the thing that stands out, and it's one of the things that made, you know, that run of Judd Apatow films in the 2000s, that mid to late 2000s span, up to This Is 40. Ugh. But that initial run was so good because it's comedic, it's smart. You could tell the people behind it just were trying to do something and had a point to prove. And it feels like we're getting that energy from this group. That has me so excited for everything that all of them are going to do next. Like, I can't wait for the next Emma Seligman movie. I can't wait for the next Rachel Sennett movie. I can't wait for the next Io Edebiri movie.
Ruby Cruz.
Yeah, Ruby Cruz was such a standout. As the McLovin.
As the McLovin, totally.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same dynamic, too. Like, I know we don't want to just keep making comparisons to Superbad, but PJ and Hazel have the same dynamic as Seth and McLovin, where, you know, why am I forgetting Michael Cera's name?
Oh, Evan.
Evan, yeah. Evan's like cool with McLovin, and Josie's more cool with Hazel. But
plus, Evan and McLovin make out.
Yeah, could you imagine? And then having them make out was like, they had that tension, didn't they?
They should do a remake of Bottoms, but all of the actors from Superbad at their current age play all of the characters from Bottoms.
Oh my God. Could you imagine?
I don't know who Mr. G would be, but it would be glorious. I guess it would be Seth Rogen.
Yeah, Seth Rogen's Mr. G or Bill Hader.
You're one of them. Or they're like co-teachers and it's just never explained.
It's, they just switch throughout. So they're both playing Mr. G.
But and they just put on, they each have a fake mustache that they put on.
Yeah, that would be the best part. At one point, the one just walks in and the other one walks out.
I love it. All right, let's get this going.
All right, let's get the script down. Ruby Cruz, and then the fight, her big fight scene with the football players, just so ridiculous, but such a foreshadowing. Like, I love the triptych of going from the fight club to the fight where, you know, Ruby loses or Hazel loses,
yeah,
to then the final fights with Huntington, and it's such a payoff to all the fight club aspects. It's a weird kind of Chekhov's gun to the whole thing.
Yeah.
It reminded me in some ways of a movie that you don't like. Oh my God, I'm blanking on the title of that.
Got a lot to choose from.
The monster one, Chris Hemsworth.
The monster one of Crimson.
Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, yeah, Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
Joss Whedon at his finest.
He directed that?
He wrote it. Or maybe he did direct it and someone else wrote it. It's one of the two.
Drew Goddard directed it and he wrote it with Whedon.
Yeah, but it's a very Joss Whedon project.
Yeah. I like to think I appreciate the Goddardness of it all more so than the Whedon-ness, but it's a similar thing with the buildup of all the monsters and you're just waiting for this huge kind of payoff to all the insanity that's been going on, and I love that it just goes for it at the end with the final fight scene.
Man, I'm sitting here like thinking about all the stuff, because I was gonna say that when I got home, the one thing I was like, I don't want to talk too much about this movie and I don't want to sell it too much, but like the one thing I'll say is like the end really hits. Like, you don't expect where it's gonna go. Like, I don't know why I didn't expect all of the Fight Club members to, like, get in a actual giant fight with the football players and be, like, murdering them and stuff. But I just didn't see it coming. I was like, man, it really pays off. The more I think about this movie, it really does remind me of Heathers. Like, I feel like that is probably the most comparable. Have you seen Heathers?
I have not seen Heathers.
I mean, it's an all-female cast. There's a lot of, like, death and killing and murdering and just like psychopaths, and it's so funny to me that Bottoms goes there. Like, it suddenly is made very clear that this opposing football team is looking to murder people from the other school. Like, it wasn't a joke, it wasn't like tongue-in-cheek, like this is happening, and at the end these girls have to fight them off and murder them if they want to save people at their school. It's just, it goes to such an insanely heightened place that is setting that up and achieving it. Like, that's not an easy thing to do.
No. And it's fascinating too, because it's thematic. Like, the conflict throughout the movie is with the football players and the football team.
Yeah.
But it's not them that they fight. It gets into this kind of thematic place of community in a strange way at the end of like an us versus them and inclusivity, which like inclusivity is, I don't want to say like always a common theme in LGBTQ cinema. I covered Aglyph for a number of years in Austin, the Austin Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, and I was just seeing so many movies that would explore similar themes, but the way in which this film kind of has a like side perspective into inclusivity by not saying this is what the movie's about, but by making it that these girls that are representative of an LGBT community in the school, having this outsiderness, but then eventually rising to be part of the group and part of the community and helping the community in this big battle, it feels like a relevant statement, not just for fun, but also one of these things of just like, hey, look, we're part of this and we can be part of everything. Stop casting us as outsiders all the time, because we're going to fight for our place and we have value. And the fact that the football players, which kind of represent the traditional like dynamics of society, are the ones that like aren't fighting back, are paralyzed, are overwhelmed, and also so they have to defend the football players but also fight football players. I just really like the nuance of that and the way it doesn't just go one-dimensional with our football players are the bad guys, let's fight them, but makes it a very community driven film while still getting at this like us versus them dynamic.
In that way, like everything you've described, it feels, which is what I think any high school movie is really trying to do, whether it's dramatic and down to earth or absurd like this, like it is trying to depict the high school experience. And in that way, I think that's sort of what I was trying to get at earlier as I was talking in circles about like wondering if I would be able to connect with a movie like this that's very LGBT focused. Like a big part of this movie is just inclusivity, like feeling part of a whole, feeling part of a community, feeling like you belong, which is something anybody can relate to. Even if you were popular in high school, like you probably have those kinds of feelings. I know I did. Every time I look back at my high school experience, I kind of cringe. I mean, I was a kid, I had a lot to learn, but like thinking about like what could have been, the kind of person I could have pushed myself to be, and a big reason I didn't do a lot of things was just a profound lack of self-confidence, which I think dogged me for many years and even really does to this day in a lot of cases. So like, there are a lot of things in this movie I see like even in myself now, and it's a cool movie in that way, because you want a high school movie to achieve those highs and like really feel like that high school experience, and a lot of them only ostensibly do, like believe they're doing it, but it's just very genuine in that way. Like everything you've described, like it's all very genuinely achieved.
Yeah, there's something I think in the most fun or endearing or classic high school movies, something triumphant about it that kind of gets at the potential of we're all kind of fucked up, but we all kind of like, I don't know, are learning something. There's potential, there's the future. You feel like you climbed over this wall into the next phase of who you can be and will be. And having that have such a payoff in this movie and making it feel so earned in the fights and cathartic in the fights.
Mm-hmm.
It was lovely.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Here's a question for you. What year do you think this movie takes place?
I didn't even know it didn't take place in 2023. So I don't know if I have a guess for that. I mean, they play Avril Lavigne at one point, which just a quick side stop here. Road stop. I love the soundtrack of this movie. Charlie XCX did the soundtrack. I love her. I didn't even know she did the music for this movie before going into it. She's one of my faves, and both the Avril Lavigne stain and the Bonnie Tyler stain, like that was awesome. I just really enjoyed the music in this movie.
Yeah, the Bonnie Tyler. Well, that's one of the things, like for the Bonnie Tyler stuff, Jeff's listening on a Discman.
Yeah.
It's like a CD and a disc. And we never see people with cell phones, right?
Gosh. No, I don't know. I guess not. Because that is weird. Like, the next day, PJ tells Josie about what, you know, that she got with Isabel. Or Josie tells PJ. Yeah. Sorry, my bad. Like, she could have texted that or called her or whatever. But, like, she finds out the next day in school in person, you know.
Yeah, and the cars are all old, the like the dress is all kind of older.
Huh. Do you have insight into the year?
It's the only thing that we really get. So from the actual film itself, it looks like it's set in the 80s, kind of, especially when you see the Discman. But then when they're talking with Punky Johnson, or when Josie's talking to Punky Johnson, Punky starts relating the Huntington attacks on the town and mentions 73, 92, and I think 03 as the years of the attacks.
Oh, yeah, that's happened. Right.
So the movie can't be taking place in the 80s or 90s because it's been 20 years since the last game. Is that right?
Yeah.
So if it's been 20 years and the last one that she lists was 03, that means the movie's taking place in 2023. It's just anachronistic because nothing in the movie resembles 2023.
That's funny. In that way, I mean, that makes me really like this movie, like the whole aesthetic, because I like that. It feels like a nod to the kinds of high school movies it's actually paying homage to. Movies that were from like the 80s and 90s, like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Heathers, Jawbreaker, Bring It On, you know, that kind of stuff. Like even Grease. I feel like I see a lot of Grease in this. It's trying to evoke the feeling and tone of those kinds of movies without feeling too modern.
Yeah. Which is not an easy thing to accomplish.
No. I mean, I didn't even think about it till this moment, but like as you're saying all this stuff, I'm like, yeah, that all checks out.
I think it just goes to show the level of attention and nuance that they had, because you don't stumble onto that. It's something that you make the choice early on that you're going to have the attire feel like a certain decade. You're going to have the aesthetic of the buildings and the town and everything else feel like a certain decade. Mm. You're going to have the technology be limited to a certain era.
Right.
I just love the fact that you can feel kind of the artisanal aspect to all of this, to where I don't want to compare it to like Etsy in that way, but just the difference in, you know, sometimes an Etsy product versus something that you just buy at Target.
Right. Where
you can tell somebody was putting in time and effort. And this movie just feels, it has that auteur touch that I feel like I've been missing from a lot of mainstream cinema recently, where so many of the films don't feel like they're giving the filmmaker the space to have their style and their voice.
Sure, yeah.
Which was one of the things I loved about Barbie, and one of the things that I loved about, why am I forgetting the movie from last year with the woman in the basement?
Barbarian.
Yeah, Barbie and Barbarian. That was another one that just, it felt like it had its voice and its vibe and was doing something new. So the more movies that we're getting were people just remember, yeah, we should let these artists have their way and really allow them to take the movie places. I'm happy about that.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Yeah, that probably explains a lot of success for something like A24. Or Neon, which, you know, those are both studios that compromised during the writer's strike and everything and made deals with SAG. Like, they want they do want people to have their, like, they see the value in someone like creating something unique that doesn't feel familiar, that has its own personality and style.
Yeah. Isn't Searchlight another one?
Probably. I'm so annoyed by the whole strike in general that I don't know how much I'm even paying attention, but it does please me to hear that some studios are valuing the artist's voice.
Yeah. I'm so angry. Like the fact that there were just the numbers that came out that, what was it? It was Warner Brothers Discovery thought that they were going to lose out on something like $300 to $500 million due to the strike. But the strike requests, if they were just to agree to the same things that Neon agreed to, that A24 agreed to, was going to cost them like $47 million.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, drop in the bucket.
So annoying. So annoying.
Yeah. But Bottoms, hey, Bottoms got made and Bottoms is great.
Bottoms is great.
Seriously. I don't care if you're not a fan of Charlie XCX. Like, that's a fucking baller move. Like, that is such a cool, fucking cool thing to do. To have her just, like, choose the soundtrack and put together all the music. Like, this weird, like, synthy party vibe that she has in her music, like, is, like, throughout the movie. Like, that's just a good move. Like, fucking smart people making this movie.
The Charlie fan would feel that way, wouldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I speak for all non-Charlie fans on that one too.
What I'm looking at the Wikipedia. So the soundtrack for Bottoms has its own Wikipedia page.
As it should.
During the production of the film, Seligman and lead actress screenwriter Rachel Sennett wanted a Y2K sad girl anthem for the film.
Fuck yeah.
So yeah, that's
Y2K. That makes you think it's like early 2000s.
Oh, and Charlie happened to record a song. Yeah, it does make you feel that way. Hmm. Hot girl for Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. And then Charlie claimed that she was a fan of Shiva Baby.
Oh, nice. I mean, she would say that, but I believe her.
That's cool. What was the other thing? Oh, Jeff was also... I don't think Jeff stole the show the way that Ken kind of stole Barbie in some ways, which is really ironic that so many people feel like Ken was one of the like the best part about Barbie. I don't think Jeff was the best part about Bottoms, but there were moments where he absolutely was just... hilarious.
He's almost like a Disney villain or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's adored. Like, he's allowed to act like the way he does because, like, they need him to win this football game, you know? Like, that kind of character has existed in movies, but to the level he takes it to feels unique.
Yeah, the weird childish nobility that he has is... so funny to me. But every time he was on screen, I was just like, all right, what the fuck is about to happen here?
But it's actually interestingly done because he kind of is a little fragile and delicate. Like, he puts on a big show, but like, he needs protection. He needs all these guys around him, like, watching his back. He can die from pineapple juice. Like, there's a lot of ways he's like kind of a wuss, but he does not act that way. It's just very, it's interesting how funny it is.
Yeah, it was cracking me up. And then I think this was my favorite. I've seen Marshawn Lynch in a few things since he got into acting, and he's been okay in most of it.
Yeah, I agree.
And in this one, I thought it was the first time that I was like, oh, this was legitimately, like, Marshawn was great in this.
Yeah, it feels, I think you're right, it feels a little more realized in that way. Like, he clearly has a very specific kind of humor that works because, like, everybody knows who he actually is. Like, that's a tough thing to pull off and keep consistently funny. But I agree, he does a good job in this movie. And as you see from the bloopers, like, there's a lot of ad-libbing going on. So it seems like it was just again, very genuinely born from the energy of this movie and everybody being together, that he was able to channel what he channeled in this movie.
It also feels somewhat thematically relevant in the fact that we were talking about earlier about the football team and what the football team represented, and here you have an actual professional football player playing.
That's funny.
Who's turned actor. There's almost a meta commentary to having him play that role.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting because this is so satirical about football players, but then to actually have one who's in on it and like has a good role in the film and is a kind of a ally character in the film.
Right.
I just like that choice a lot.
Yeah, no, it's and he even has his own journey where like he has a falling out with PJ and Josie and like is anti-feminist. Like again, it's just so ridiculous. It's great.
What was your favorite part?
I mean, I know I've talked about this like three times already, but absolutely. Here, I'll say this. My favorite part of the movie, period, was the Avril Lavigne montage. Because when I was, was I a freshman in high school when that movie came, when that song came out? I absolutely adored that song. Bought the Avril Lavigne CD. And I have a very specific memory. I don't know why I have this memory, but I remember it, where I'm on my on the phone with my friend and I'm telling him how great the song Complicated by Avril Lavigne is. And he's probably just like sitting there like, okay, it's okay, Travis. It's not like that great. And I think the exact line was like, I think it's the best song I've ever heard. Like, I just like, I was just so attached to this song, and there was just like silence on the other end. As soon as that song came on, I was like pretty jazzed. I was like, all right, I haven't heard this song in a while. Let's go. But I thought the montage, I don't know why, maybe it was just the energy of that song, but the montage was just so well done in a classic high school movie way. That in the moment as it was going, I was like, I feel like I haven't seen a good montage in a long time, like from a modern movie. I was like racking my brain. I was like, I can't think of any, you know, high school esque movie that had like an awesome montage like this. I was just ecstatic about it. Tangentially to that, the soundtrack was my favorite part of the movie, and this scene in particular was my favorite part.
I feel like that. I've known you for so long now and know you so well, but that story is so encapsulating.
Yeah, it is.
That it's like, oh yeah, any like vestiges of mystery that were still there are gone.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, the puzzle's been pieced.
Yeah, I understand Travis to his core.
Yeah, the key was Avril Lavigne.
Always is.
Skater Boy too. Fucking rock that shit.
I think my favorite part, I think it has to just be the ending and how over the top the final fight is.
It's pretty awesome.
It's so funny. Just all the cast just cracked me up too. I can't get over how much I loved everybody in this movie. The way that they all just kind of showed up, stood out.
Yeah.
I feel like Havana Rose Liu is gonna be like a pretty, should be like a big star.
Yeah. I it's funny because like she seems like she has the most straight character. Like she's the Jim of the group almost.
Right.
But also she gets sucked into the insanity. Like she does get back together with Jeff. Like there's just something, she has a very nuanced performance, I think, that's difficult to stand out in a movie with people acting like cartoon characters. So yeah, she does a great job.
The fact that Jeff carries her around, she just jumps into his arms. I love it so much.
Yeah. Everybody does really great. Like Kaya Gerber is Brittany, like all the girls in the Fight Club. It's just, everyone's really hitting their marks.
Yeah, Sylvie screaming.
Yeah. Which, when it first happened, I was like, I don't know if I found it funny, but she kept screaming, and I was like, it is funny.
Yeah, she convinced me. That is funny. I also liked that Dagmara Domenichek.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a big fan of the Count of Monte Cristo film.
Yeah, you are.
From back in the day. So this is the first time I think I've seen her in something since the Count of Monte Cristo.
I'm sure that was the case for a lot of people.
Which is kind of wild. So I was looking at her and I was like, I know her, but I don't recognize her. Oh, she was also Carolina in Succession.
Oh, that's probably how you know her.
Whoa. Wow. I'd even put that together. It's funny that I didn't recognize her in that, but I recognized her in this.
She might be the most legitimate actor in this movie. Which it makes sense because they give her such a prominent billing in the credits, which surprised me because she's not a huge part of the movie. I was like, oh, she must be somebody. So it's not, you know, I'm looking, sitting here looking at her Wikipedia page. She's been on a ton of stuff.
It seemed like, I feel like Emma and Rachel just have a lot of respect for the people that they,
right,
that supported them in this movie, from Dagmara and Punky Johnson, Marshawn Lynch. It feels like they really wanted to kind of honor them for being part of it.
Yeah. God, that's just the, I mean, we've roundaboutly said this already, but that's such an awesome part of this movie that there's kind of like a worksmanship to it. Like there's a core sense of camaraderie that, you know, these seemingly small actors in the movie are actually like a really big part and really important to the whole experience, and we'll get prominent billing at the end. Like we're gonna give them like their own chance to like ad lib and make jokes in the credit scene. That's just such a cool thing that I feel like you don't really see in movies anymore, and it's just a nice, it was just so refreshing to see that energy on screen in a modern movie.
Yeah what a movie.
Yeah, good stuff. The second I got done watching it, I was just so excited because I was like, it has extreme rewatchability, which means Lauren and I can watch it like 10 more times.
Oh, yeah. This is, I keep saying it all over Twitter, but this is a decade defining comedy and like an instant classic. This is one that people are going to be talking about for years.
Yeah. It feels like Mean Girls in that way where like, even if you don't like it, you can't deny that like, it has something unique and is going to be a movie like we talk about for a while.
Yeah. Which, speaking of, where do you rank it?
Okay, everybody, let's go through this routine again. Chris and I rank every movie we've watched since we started doing these lists. I started mine at the beginning of 2022. Chris started his in like June 2022?
July of 2022. July.
Which is partly why mine has so many more movies, but the other reason is I have no life.
You just watch so many more movies than me. I
love watching
movies. I watch one and I can't watch another until I've written about the one that I've watched.
If I don't know write about it.
Yeah.
So my list is up to 446 movies.
Whew.
I added a couple this weekend. I rewatched Eastern Promises and I Love You, Man.
Ooh, how is Eastern Promises on rewatch? I haven't seen that since theaters.
I hadn't either. And weirdly, I watched it with my wife's parents. They really like the movie, I guess. Even though it's a pretty dark movie.
Yeah.
And it does a lot of things I wouldn't expect them to like. But they apparently just like the their big sell of the movie to Lauren, who had never seen it, is it has one of the best fight scenes ever. And it was the fight scene in the like the spa, you know?
Yeah, the bathhouse fight.
Yeah, where Viggo gets naked and
yeah.
You know, they really like that scene. And I do remember at the time it had a lot of buzz. There was a lot of buzz around that scene.
Yep.
Anyway, I thought it held up. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's kind of a straightforward movie in a lot of ways. The plot and the motions like all feel familiar and tropish, but it has a dating David Cronenberg aesthetic. Like it just feels and looks different than any other movie. Like if anybody else had made this movie, it could have been so boring, but like there's a whatever vision he brings to it, it has a vibrancy So in that sense, I enjoyed it. I mean, it's not like the best movie I've ever seen, but it's, you know, it's better than like an average movie.
I feel like it's kind of like Crimes of the Future.
Yeah, right. It's like totally like that.
It's,
although I haven't seen that.
If anybody else made the movie, it's probably far less watchable. But Cronenberg just happens to have just a feel for it that makes it a lot more dynamic.
So I have 446 movies on my list, and I guess this makes it sound like I don't have bottoms very high, but I'm looking at all the movies surrounding bottoms on my list, and like they're all movies I love, you know. And it's ranked up there with like classics like The Trouble with Harry. It's a Hitchcock movie. Harakiri, which is the number one ranked movie on Letterboxd. Like, I have it around those movies. I have it ranked right now at 195.
Okay. So top half for you.
It's a movie I think could go up with time as I like fall into it a little bit more and like just know it front to back. I think it could become one of those movies and I'm like, I tell my kids about.
I think I'm curious. I'm sure you're going to get a rewatch in there soon. Update everybody.
I absolutely will. I will tell everybody the second I update it.
I have it at currently, I have 156 movies that I've watched. And I have bottoms at number 17 currently.
All right. So that's pretty high.
Yeah. It's in the second highest category, the amazing category. And I have it above X, but below Barbie. I keep going back and forth on whether or not I want to put it above Barbie.
The 2023 rankings.
Oh, yeah. 2023 rankings, too.
At what place do you have it in your 2023 rankings?
It's number 4 in 2023.
All right. And what are the top? Give me the top 5.
Bo is Afraid at number 1. I should have started with 5. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem is 5. Bottoms is 4. Barbie's 3. Past Lives is 2. And Bo is Afraid is 1.
Yeah. And for Travis, my list is a little more ridiculous. So Bottoms wouldn't be in the top 5. Where do I have it? I have it right below, you're not going to like this. I have it right below Infinity Pool.
Whoa. I didn't even know you watched Infinity Pool. And yeah, you liked Infinity Pool that much?
Well, you know, as you just heard from my Eastern Promises spiel, that I'm a big Cronenberg fan and I even like his son's aesthetic.
Whoa, we're going to have to talk about this one more.
We can. I mean, if you make the article blow up on the site, we'll be forced to talk about it.
That's true.
But yeah, I have Bottoms at number 10.
Okay. Okay. 10 out of what?
Right now I'm at 27 movies, which I need to, that needs to go up. I need to watch a few new movies.
I'm at 36.
Yeah, you're doing good.
Yeah.
I mean, I like watching old movies. That's the only thing. Like, like any night I have to myself, I'm watching like an old ass movie. So that's mostly the issue with me.
You oldie. Okay, so that was good.
I'm glad
we both liked it.
Absolutely. I find it, I don't know if I would really want to even speak with someone who didn't like this movie.
I know, that's kind of how I feel. Like, you don't have a sense. It's the same way with The Stripe. There are people that are like, oh, they shouldn't be striking. I'm like, I don't think I ever want to talk to you again. Like, if you're defending the studio, just, if you don't like this, I get like maybe not liking the movie, but if you think it's a bad movie, no. Mm-hmm. Get the hell out of here.
Yeah, come onto our podcast and let us yell at you.
Yeah, just give us your phone number.
And then we'll give it out to everyone else.
Right, who loves Bottoms. You. Yeah. Oh god.
We JK. Will
not. We will not. Okay, what do we talk about next?
Oh god, what is wrong with us?
We never plan ahead.
Oh wait, we did plan for Donnie Darko.
Oh yeah, I think we're at that point, right? Nothing I else is so. Kind of blowing up.
Yeah, and I'm excited to watch it again, so let's do that. We're doing the director's cut.
The only consideration would be After Sun.
Okay, let's have a little suspense. It'll be one of those two movies.
Okay. We'll see.
So go watch them both to be prepared, everybody.
It's not Interstellar.
It's not Interstellar. I mean, someday it might be.
All right. Until next time. Oh, yeah. What do we say?
Okay, let me check. We got lights.
Camera.
See ya. Sure.
We'll get there.